This week on the eBay for Business podcast.
I guess I would just say, make sure that everybody in your life is kind of behind you and supporting you, and that you sell something that you love. Because in the end, if you have inventory left over, like I do, I've got thousands of stamps and things. I'm a stamper and I love to stamp. So once I retire and what doesn't sell to someone else, I'll be able to use it myself.
I'm Rebecca.
I'm Griff, and this is the eBay for Business podcast, your weekly source for the information, check, inspiration, check, you need to start and run and grow a business on the world's most powerful marketplace. This is episode 143. Welcome back to the desk, Rebecca.
I am delighted to be here, Griff. How are you?
I'm okay. As you know, we should talk a little bit about why we're going to say in a moment there's no news this week.
And what is the reason for that?
Because I'm not here. We're recording all of the episodes that you're going to listen to in June in the last week of May. And because of that, we have no idea what the news will be from week to week. But there is a way for you to stay on top of it, and that's to check out the seller news announcement board every morning of every day of every week so that you stay on top of any breaking news that eBay releases.
And we'll put the link to that in the show notes. No news, but we have a lot to talk about today anyway, don't we, Griff?
Yes, it's true. This week, we're going to continue with part two of our seller best listing practices. And then we'll meet with two eBay sellers that I've known for a long time, Sharon and John Ware. They're based in Kentucky. We're going to learn how their business has evolved over the last 10 years from a very small sort of eBay business to where now they have two warehouses.
And then, of course, I'll be back to help answer this week's seller question. Why don't we start with part two of some of the best seller best listing practices and tips?
Back in episode 141, we read a bunch of the best of the submissions for the sweepstakes on Facebook, and we were posting the answers to the question, what are your best listing practices? And we had quite a few of them. Rebecca, thanks for coming back to help with the rest on this list.
We have some great hints here, and so let's go with part two of all of the best answers or our favorite answers that we've selected for you.
We'll alternate reading each one. Shall I start this time?
By all means, Griff.
So the first of the posts that were selected is by Cindy. And Cindy said, I have learned a lot about all the important aspects of listing on eBay over the years. Good titles, accurate descriptions, and really good photographs. Remember, that was a big part of the tips last month. These are all the key to standing out in a crowd. In addition to all these things, I found that excellence in customer service makes a seller stand out from the rest. Honesty, integrity, and communication are key in attracting buyers, and I have refined my business practices to reflect those values.
Every interaction is a chance to win or lose a buyer. And so thinking about every conversation that you have with a buyer, every action that you take, that's a moment to build your business bit by bit. Elisa says, I have several best practices for our listings. They need to be good quality photos with little distractions, even the fold of the light box. She goes on to say, using Terapeak to check out listing titles to get the best results and competitive price, and then listing and sending offers daily. Depends on the workload. I may list 3 items a day and send offers at least twice daily, morning and afternoon. Rarely do I work evenings, but when I do, I send offers out then too.
Wow. She's a busy little bee.
He is. But, you know, and we heard this last time too, consistency and being active in your listings.
Yeah.
Sounds like that's really a winning combination.
When you think about it, if you have a brick and mortar store, you have to show up every day. You can't just decide, I'm going to open it today and I'm not going to open it tomorrow. It's the same way with selling on eBay.
True. And you probably have to like rearrange your items and restock. So even though it's digital, you still have to do the same thing.
Yeah. Our next one is the sweepstake winner, and I would remind you that the winners are picked by random, so all of the posts are put into a box, and then somebody picks out the one by random, and Linda was the one who won. Linda says, lots of good photos. Again, that's such a common theme. Detailed description with all damage listed. Boy, that's important. Best offers accepted, and then list it and forget it. She says, auctions are rare for me. She's one of those buy it now people who that's what they like.
Interesting. All damage listed. I mean, I think the story there, the headline there, Griff, is no surprises. And that kind of goes back to the customer service piece of it. You want to know that buyers know exactly what they're getting.
There's a common theme I'm sure you picked up on, which is the idea of great photos. Not only should they be clear and they should be focused and they should show just the item, you want to make sure, and I still see people doing this, that your photos are big. And when I say big, I mean, you know, in megabytes or in file size, because I think there's a lot of sellers who think, well, this is like film in a camera and I don't want to waste it. So I have to keep my pictures smaller so I don't waste megabytes. Well, that was true for film, but it's not true for digital files. And in fact, although there is a limit, a maximum to how big your images could be, it's going to be really hard to meet that. So the bigger your photo is, the better.
Our next hint comes from Alana, and she's got a lot to say. Here we go. There are many things that make a listing perfect. Look at it from the perspective of a buyer. Oh, I love that. If you have a hard time doing so, have someone else take a look. Oh, now there is a hint. Have someone else review your listings. I love that.
It's called proofreading.
Everyone needs an editor.
Yes.
Okay, number one, title. Size, style, brand, color, keywords. Do not include symbols. Only capitalize the first letter of words. And don't use acronyms like NWT, which stands for new with tag. Number two, make sure specific fields are filled. The only field that should have does not apply is UPC, if you don't know it. All other recommended specifics that you can't fill out should be left blank.
Thank you.
Don't put NA because people aren't searching for NA and it may reduce search results. This is someone who's been listening to the podcast, Griff.
Thank you, Alana.
Number three, photos should be clear and from every angle. Front, back, tags, or also top, bottom, side to side. Absolutely. Number four, fill out your descriptions, especially for pre-owned condition. A buyer wants to know you looked at it for flaws. Make sure to take a corresponding photo for any flaw and note the photo after the flaw description. Include size, material, condition, etc. in the description. It's easier for a buyer to check and see your description than it is to see the specifics. So don't rely on the specifics to be their source of information for your product. What great advice from Alana to other sellers. And I can't disagree with a word that she said. It's all so important.
Yeah, if anything, Alana is the type of person who should consider being a selling tutor.
Absolutely.
Our next tip is from Cynthia. And Cynthia says, I work during the week and I find it hard to take photos and list. Wow, two jobs. Oof. So I do a big photo shoot on the weekend. And during the week, I list 5 to 8 items a day, depending on my work schedule. I can do one here, one there, and they add up each week. Consistency in your work habits is what's going to make your business more successful.
And it makes you more efficient as a seller as well. Leslie says, I sell mostly vintage and antique, so I include everything in my listing that I look for in auction listings. Multiple clear photos, no distracting background, a size reference, no unnecessary words in the title, also free returns for any reason, instills confidence, and then include as many item specifics as you possibly can. Use promoted listings. Include pertinent, correct details without overwhelming mobile devices with unnecessary information.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah, so many buyers are on mobile now. And also, make sure that you have quality items, but disclose even the tiniest flaw. And list daily to get the algorithms working for you. If you can manage to even be $1 less than your competitors and or offer interesting and rare items, you have an advantage. Your listing may take a few minutes extra, but I found it's more about quality than quantity. And most importantly, a hidden spot in your inventory room for your most trusted 15-year-old assistant to take a break.
Well, I'm glad she's utilizing the children.
I mean, I have a 16-year-old assistant, and I do highly recommend if you can't get a thermal printer, get yourself a teenage assistant.
All I have are dogs. I don't have kids, but I can't get them to do anything with those. They have no opposable thumbs, so. Our last tip on this subject, which again, I would remind you is what are your best listing practices, comes from Julie. And Julie says, for clothing, I've started including a photo of the item's measurement on a whiteboard. Not only has this sped up my process a little bit, but I'm hoping it will help those buyers who only look at photos. I've gotten a lot of questions over the years from buyers looking for measurements that were already clearly in the description. Hopefully this will help, as long as it's not the first photo.
What a great hint. And there could be other details that you maybe want to include as a photo, but measurements on the whiteboard, I love it.
Yeah. We've seen some sellers, and this is a common industry practice. I see nothing wrong with it, who will put something in the photo with an item that everyone knows the size, for example, a quarter, to give you an idea of scale. Because even if there's the measurements in the description, sometimes the idea of scale still isn't clear to a buyer. But if they see it next to an item, they know. Whether that's a quarter, or sometimes they'll put a can of soda, hopefully without the brand showing, And everyone knows how big a can of soda is. So if you see an item next to it, you can say, oh, it's that much bigger or that much smaller than a can of soda or a quarter. That kind of reference for measurement really helps too.
With the simple, clean, probably white background, even if you put in an item for scale.
I cannot say enough about this. I used to use some black backgrounds for some stuff, and now I don't. I use white backgrounds for everything, and I use my iPhone to take photos because it's really the best option.
And it's really, it's industry standard. Almost any place where you shop online, you'll see white backgrounds. So I think that eBay sellers want to align with those standards. Well, Griff, that's all we have for this week. And I say all, but gosh, that was amazing.
Yeah, two whole segments of tips on that one question. And we'll have more. As I said, Kirsty Dunn will be back with us occasionally to provide some of the responses to other questions that were asked during the sweepstakes. So stay tuned for those. And Rebecca, I cannot thank you enough for being our co-host for this one. Thanks again.
I am so glad to be here. Thanks, Griff.
We'll have more in the weeks ahead. And to view these and other posts, visit the eBay for Business Facebook page. And I'm going to put the link to that, of course, in the transcript for this episode. I met our first guest many, many, many years ago at an eBay event. And back then, if I recall correctly, and it's sometimes hard for me to recall things, but I think I remember that they were running a small business on eBay from their RV. We'll find out if that's true. Please welcome our good friends, John and Sharon Ware. Hi, guys.
Hi, Griff. How are you today?
I'm okay. Sharon, how are you?
I'm good, too.
So before we get started, what is your eBay user ID?
Well, we have actually three stores. Can we give you our store names?
Yes, please.
Okay. So first store that we opened right when we first started with eBay was John's store. And he was a volunteer retired fire chief. And so he was selling fire department trucks. And we named his store Station 4 Collectibles. From there, we ventured into the arts and crafts world, and I started another store called the Dandy Rubber Stamps and Crafts. And later on in our journey, we happened upon a sewing store that was going out of business, and we bought out thousands of sewing patterns. And so we opened a third store, and that one's called Dandy Sewing Patterns.
How do you manage three stores?
Well, we have different ways to do it. We've got a lot of different businesses other than those three eBay stores.
Wait. You have other businesses?
We do. We ventured out into other platforms. And 2 years ago, we purchased a store that was already set up with an e-commerce site. We purchased a business. So we also have our own business, our own brand. And it's in the crafting arena as well.
How do you manage all of this?
Well, it's Sharon and I. And then we have Sharon's cousin who works with us, who also had an eBay store that Sharon taught her how to sell on eBay. And it's just the three of us. We have a formal inventory system, and we have over probably $100,000 worth of inventory. And we come in the office every day and pack up our orders and take them to the post office.
So you take your orders to the post office. They don't come and pick up?
No. We're in a very small rural town. We just load up the back of my SUV, and I take them over and pull into the back door of the post office, and ring the bell. They come and unlock the door and let me in the back door. I just load up one of their carts and go for it.
Are they happy to see you, I hope?
They're lovely people, and they grin every time I come in.
Did they ask you questions about your business?
They do. They've had people come into their counter, and they've asked me to help them with questions they have also.
When I first met you, you guys had a very small business, and I believe you were also doing classes.
Yes. When we first started with eBay in 2005, we had moved to Florida to help take care of John's father. And so we had both had a 30-year corporate career behind us. And so we brought all of that business information, technology, know-how to eBay. We started with eBay. We needed, you know, something to do. So we went to a small community college and took an eBay course. And I'm a teacher at heart, have always been. And my corporate career was as an IT person. I love technology and all of that. I fast-paced the program and was the 19th person to sign up to be a certified business consultant with eBay. And so I developed a business around it. And so I had a consulting business with eBay for many years, independent business, of course. We traveled all over the country, and we would spend the night up to 3 or 4 nights in a hotel and connect with businesses and train their businesses and their employees how to do eBay. And so our world was surrounded by eBay. And we've made so many friends, including you, and so many colleagues along the way. And we consider them our eBay family. And we very much consider eBay a family.
Now, to our listeners who are wondering what Sharon's talking about when she said eBay Business Consultant and Power You, this was an old program that used to be available to eBay sellers called eBay University, where you could take classes at eBay and then get a, I don't want to say certification, but a recognition and be part of a program where people would look for local coaches or mentors or classes, and we would list those. That program stopped about 6 years ago. But there's a lot of folks who, like Sharon, created careers out of this, and they're still, many of them are still doing it. Just so that I think we're going to get people who are saying, hey, Griff, I want to be an eBay business consultant, or I want to take Power U. That program, unfortunately, had to cease about 6 years ago.
We used to have people come into our home and sit in the Lazy Boy for the day, and we'd teach them eBay. Even had somebody come from Italy and spend the day in our living room.
Can you speak Italian?
Thank goodness he spoke English.
Oh, good.
But you know what, Griff? I actually set his store up on eBay. I guess it was IT at the time.
Yes.
And because I was so familiar with the eBay interface, I was able to use a translator, like online translator, and I set his entire store up for him on eBay Italy. And it worked perfectly for him.
What other channels besides eBay do you sell on?
Well, we started, of course, with eBay. That's our backbone. And then we ventured into Amazon, of course. And it was after we moved to Kentucky. We were in Florida when we started our business because of John's father, like I said. Then in 2009, we moved to Kentucky, and we are on a 42-acre farm. I'm the sixth generation to have the farm. And so we're just blooming where we're planted. We've been here 12 years. Just a little bit of a backstory. In 2013, we decided to do a cross-country trip. We had already bought out the sewing pattern store, and we had all of these thousands and thousands of sewing patterns. But at that time, we decided to take a cross-country tour. We had some speaking engagements in Tucson. There was an eBay function there, and we had another trade show to wind up the trip. Along the way, we did what was called retail arbitrage, and we would stop at all kinds of different stores. We especially went to Toys and Babies R Us and a lot of other stores. Of course, they're out of business now, but we would pick up products and take them back to our room and box them up and mail them home along the way. And that's what you were talking about, where we were doing all of that cross country, and we love that. And so we started buying puzzles, and that was kind of our beginning. And when we came back from that trip, we started looking for a place to expand our business and out of our home, because we had people coming in to help us and we had a small home, and so it was just too much. So we decided that we were going to expand, and we found a place that was 800 square foot. We moved into there and turned it into a beautiful office and thought that was just going to be plenty of room. In the next year, 2014, I ventured out to California again and went to the large craft trade show out there and connected with a lot more manufacturers. We also were connected with a manufacturer's representative here that repped Kentucky. And so she had lots of lines. And so at that point in time, we dropped retail arbitrage and we went and bought directly from manufacturers and suppliers. Because of our history with our company that we had retired from, we were very familiar with the buying process and connecting with relationships with suppliers and building those relationships. And John's last part of his corporate career,
I was in corporate marketing as a marketing manager and handled probably $4 billion worth of company inventory nationwide.
He was part of like a purchasing process. So we connected with these different manufacturers and we found products that were obviously profitable. And then we, after selling several months, we determined that we could sell X amount per month. And so we would give them what was called blanket purchase orders. And we would tell them to release X amount of this every month on a regular basis. And by doing so, we would get a lot better cost, obviously, because our inventory that we would buy on a yearly basis was much more than just, you know, several at a time. So I think that learning how to buy correctly was one of the key things in helping us grow our business initially.
And having the expertise that both of you had from your previous businesses was a big help.
Absolutely. We lived in St. Louis at the last part of our corporate career. And before that, my whole entire experience with this company was in customer service. And so I was talking all the time with different customers. So I knew, and I have taken all kinds of different customer relationship courses through, you know, the years, and supervisor of customer service and all of that. We knew that the customer is king, and you have to treat your customers right. Even in this business where you might go, oh my gosh, you know, that we know that maybe that's not the whole truth, you know, you know what I'm saying? But still, you treat them with grace, and you always give the customer a way to work with you, and you make it right.
What sets eBay apart from any of the benefits for selling something like on Amazon or even on your own website?
I believe with eBay, you have a closer relationship with your customers. With Amazon, it's very...
More business-like with Amazon, where with eBay, it's more of a family transaction.
eBay allows us to connect with customers. Amazon, they not so much. You know, they want everything to go through their systems and all. Phone numbers are hidden and email addresses are hidden, and they don't want you dealing directly with your customers. But eBay allows us to do that and can stay connected with customers, so that especially people who do custom work and just where they make orders specifically for a certain customer in a certain way, it's so much easier with eBay than it is with any other platform. You'd ask us before what other platforms we have tried. Etsy, with limited success. We've tried Walmart we gave it several years, and that just didn't work out for us either. And we can talk a little bit about our own brand.
Well, I do want to talk about that, because one of the things that fascinated me when we were catching up and planning to have a segment with the two of you was that I learned that you have your own brand now. And branding, we talk a lot about it on the podcast. It's not easy coming up with a brand and then making it consistently. Can you talk a little bit about your brand? John, did you assist in this, or was this just a Sharon, or was it a joint effort?
It was a joint venture. It was a supplier that we had purchased from in the past. 2 years ago, we had the opportunity to purchase the company from the lady that owned it. She did not have the time to devote to it. She owned three other companies, and this was the redheaded stepchild of what she had. So we purchased the company on a wing and a prayer. We've enjoyed having it so far. It's been quite successful. We just treat it just like any other business. It's our own website, it's our Amazon, and it's our eBay. And all three of them are just doing well.
And this is where the word dandy comes in.
Well, the dandy was from the very, very beginning. I visited my mom one time, and her backyard was full of dandelions and violets. And it was the most beautiful thing. That was when I had just first started becoming an eBay business consultant and started my consulting career. And so the consulting part of it, our business was dandelion consulting. So when we started setting up the stores, everything was dandy this and dandy that. And that's kind of where the dandy came from. But the brand that we bought was Prickly Pear Stamps, and it's PrickleyPear. Prickly Pear Stamps. And that company has been in business since 2003. And so this company is 17 years old, and it's got a long, rich history of putting out beautiful stamps and dies. Like John said, the last lady that owned it, we're the third owners of the company. And the last lady that owned it had several other businesses that she couldn't dedicate to making it grow. And she realized that. So she reached out to us and said, how would you like to buy the company? So we looked at each other and thought about it. We talked about it with our kids, and I did a lot of soul searching. Is this something we really wanted to do? And I love designing, and I'm an artist at heart. And so this has allowed me to express my artistic style and all of that. And these stamps and dies are things that you make cards, greeting cards with, and scrapbooking. I've been a scrapbooker all my life, and it's just been a real creative outlet for me. And we love it. We really love it. We have rebranded the company. We've got new logos, new packaging, new slogans, new banners, everything.
How have you changed this business since you purchased it? What are the things that you have to do to make this business grow?
The designs needed some updating, and the logo definitely needed a new facelift. I worked with a company that does all of that. We took the website and completely revised and revamped the website. It is a big commerce store. All of the backbones was set up, but we had to set up all of the shipping software, all of our tax, sales tax software, all kinds of just different back-end softwares. And I'm sorry, John's got to stop out just for a second. We've got a delivery coming in at the door.
I'm going to keep this in because that makes it interesting.
Yes, I know, right? So there was a lot of back-end technology involved with connecting and getting all of this company up to where we needed it to be. We have a formal inventory system. So at any given time, every morning we come in, we print picking tickets, and we take those tickets, and our inventory is set up on racks and shelves. We can look at the orders and tell exactly where anything is. We can look at any second and tell you how many we have of something. And as we sell on one platform, this inventory system either decrements all the other platforms immediately. This new company had to have all of that set up and integrated with that.
That's a lot of initial work.
It is. It was a lot. A lot. And we had just tubs and tubs and tubs of physical inventory that the previous owner had not packaged, had not done anything with. So we still have some of that, and we're not done. We took all of the existing inventory, which was thousands and thousands and thousands of products, because we have a new logo, we had to get all new packaging. And so we're still in the process of repacking. But we do plan next year to start going to trade shows ourselves as a supplier this time, not a buyer, which is a new. And so we have a whole booth set up with like 20 foot of tables and grids and all of that, that we will be displaying all of our products going forward next year after COVID.
How is the business going to be run back at home if you two are out on the road?
Well, Sharon's cousin can totally run the business by herself. She did that when we took our six-week road trip many years ago. She ran the business herself and does a fantastic job.
And her name is Alice, by the way. I know she's going to be listening to this. Yes.
Sorry, Alice. We didn't give you a name, and that's my own fault.
It's okay. We're
glad you're part of the organization, Alice.
Yes, we are too. We couldn't do what we do without her.
That's for sure.
Yeah, she does all of our packing and shipping, and she knows how to pull up the sites and look at in different things and answer customer questions and that kind of things. And even if we're on the road, you know, we're never far away because we have our phones with us and all of that. So we stay connected wherever we are. And that's the beauty of e-commerce. We can answer customer questions from anywhere.
Right. You can get right into the business just on your phone.
Yep, absolutely.
You mentioned inventory software before. I'm curious, is it an available software or was it something that was custom made for you?
No, it's SKU Vault, S-K-U Vault, SKU Vault.
SKU Vault. I'm going to look that up and I'll put the link to it in our episode transcript along with the links to your three stores so that if someone's interested in this, it's not an endorsement from my end, but I'm assuming it would be an endorsement from your end, right? You guys like it. You continue to use it.
We love it. Absolutely love it. It integrates so well with all the platforms. It's just fantastic.
Before we started using it, we had everything on a spreadsheet. And every single sale, John would take that sale, find the item on the spreadsheet, reduce the quantity by the quantity sold. And then from that point, you'd have to go to each platform and move the quantity. So we couldn't do what we do without this inventory system. And I know there's lots of them out there. This particular one is over in Louisville, Kentucky. And we went over to their office and talked with the people. And we visited with another company that used it and saw it in progress and their warehouse before we ever signed up with it.
And there are many different ones. I think one that most eBay sellers know would be Channel Advisor, but there are many different inventory management systems. I've never heard of SKU Vault. I'm going to have to check it out. Next year, you're going to branch out to being a supplier yourself. What other growth plans do you have?
Well, we already are a supplier with a prickly pear. We have wholesale customers, and that kind of gives us a little different perspective, too, from their point of view. We protect our suppliers, and we don't compete against them as far as price goes. But as far as growth goes, I was talking with John this morning and you had mentioned, you know, mentioning one of our challenges. But I think at this stage of our life, we probably have a 5-year plan, maybe not quite 5 years. But I think that at this time, we are kind of trying to downsize and trying to figure out how to sell a company.
you have your eyes on retirement.
We do, absolutely.
A second retirement.
Yeah, second. We've already had a 30-year career behind us, and we've had our company. We've been incorporated ourselves since 2005. So we've been in business for ourselves for 16 years.
Yeah, that makes sense to be thinking about the future that way. But I do have a question. If you're thinking about retirement and selling the business, what are your plans to do with your days after you're not running a company anymore?
Well, our plan is to continue with the prickly pear side and to close the other sides of our business and do it in a downstepping that way. Our daughter-in-law wants to continue on with prickly pear when we're finished with it. So training her and bringing her up to speed. And then at some point in time, I would love to do another coast-to-coast and border-to-border and come see you, Griff.
It's a deal.
Okay.
Yeah, there's 5 states in this vast country that I have not visited yet, and I want to get to them before the end comes.
Well, what are those 5 states?
Washington, Oregon, Idaho, Montana, North Dakota, and South Dakota.
Well, they all have amazingly beautiful things to see there, so I think you'll be in for a treat.
I believe so. We saw so much when we did the other cross country that was just amazing. So I would like to go to those 5. Of course, I didn't mention Hawaii. We'll never get to Hawaii. It's just a long flight for both of us in the health conditions that we're in.
Well, there's always a boat, but that takes longer.
Sharon won't row very well.
If you motivate her and tell her that there's a supply of stamps there, maybe she will.
There you go. Maybe so.
Given the amount of experience you have, what would be your word of advice to a seller who's considering, a specific seller? They may be selling on eBay, other platforms, and they're considering an expansion of their business, both on eBay and just in general. What would be your first word of advice, John, to them?
My first word of advice is don't move too fast. Don't overextend. Take it slow. Make sure of your steps before you take them.
Have a plan.
A 3-year plan at least.
Sharon, what would be your word of advice to that same seller?
I guess I would just say make sure that everybody in your life is kind of behind you and supporting you, and that you sell something that you love. Because in the end, if you have inventory left over, like I do, I've got thousands of stamps and things. I'm a stamper and I love to stamp. So once I retire and what doesn't sell to someone else, I'll be able to use it myself. Just sell what you love.
The biggest thing would be have fun.
Yeah, we have fun.
That's Sharon and I's motto is we're having fun, and when it stops being fun, we'll quit.
We have a lot of fun, and we share tasks, and he concentrates on what's good, what he's good at, and I do the same. Alice does the same, and all put together, you know, we make a good company. So another thing I think is really, really important is what you're not good at, hire somebody to do it. Because
right.
While you're struggling with something that you don't like to do and something that you're not good at, you could be doing what you are good at and making lots of money to sustain you and the person that you hire. So that's kind of how we also started. We had at one time 6 or 7 employees that were coming and going at different times of the day, very flexible schedules and doing different things in our business. And so, yeah, just make sure that you have your staff in place.
What's an example of something you don't like to do?
Clean house. Yeah. I mean, there are people who love to clean house. I'm not one of them. Don't get me wrong. My house is clean. And when someone can't do it, I do. But it's that. And then the packing and the shipping. When we purchased the Prickly Pear Company, I had to concentrate on designing and creating. And so we needed someone in here that could help with the packing and the shipping so that I didn't have to do that and I could concentrate on what I do. John's great with finances, and he pays the bills, and he looks at the prices and makes sure our prices are in line with other people just throughout the day, all day.
And I'm terrible with IT, and that's where Sharon comes in at with her IT experience.
Yeah.
A match made in heaven.
Definitely.
Absolutely. Yeah.
John and Sharon, I want to thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thanks for having us, Griff. It's fantastic talking to you.
Thank you so much.
John and Sharon Ware sell on eBay, and they have 3 stores, which we'll put the links to in our transcript for this episode 143. We'll also put a link to SKU Vault, the software that they use to manage their inventory.
It's time for You Got Questions.
Oh, goody, which means it's also time for We Got Answers. So what's this week's first question, Rebecca?
Well, we have a question from Rob that he sent to podcast@ebay.com. Let's read this together. How about that? Because it's a little long, although it's a really good question. I'll start.
Okay, you start.
Rob says, "Hi, Griffin team. Thanks for all the great information on item specifics, both required and recommended, that you shared on episode 141. However, I have a use case that I don't think I've heard mentioned. How should we be using item specifics, specifically required ones, when it comes to listing lots or bundles of items rather than specific individual items?"
And Rob continues, "For example, if I create a listing of multiple jazz CDs, which of the artists should be selected in the item specifics that requests the performer, even though each disc may be by a different artist? The same thing applies to release dates, record or publishing company, etc., when the listing contains more than one item. Should we choose one of the items to quote-unquote feature and focus details on that one, and the other items become bonus items? I often sell groups of all sorts of media together, books, CDs, video games, etc., and I would like to be sure I'm using the best practice. Thanks for your advice. Specifically yours, Rob Herndon."
Thanks for that, Rob. So, Griff, what can Rob specifically do in this case?
Well, it's interesting, Rebecca, because when you're selling lots, you don't want to focus just on one item in the lot, because it could be a situation where people may be looking for lots that have the other items in it, and they're going to miss out on that. So it's a real conundrum. What are you going to feature for these things to work? The best practice in a case like this is for you to bunch the items together as in as big a groups as you can. So, for example, if you're going to sell a lot of CDs, make sure they're at the very least the same genre. So if they're all jazz, then at least you can have that as an item specific that's going to work for all. But when it comes to titles, and when it comes to specifics like labels and everything else, that's just not going to be possible because we don't have that accommodation for a lot. What you're going to have to do, Rob, is in, for example, titles, you're going to have to put in your own custom title, and it's going to be various artists. The same thing with any other of the item specifics that aren't shared by all of the items in the lot. That's for the required specifics like title. But for any recommended specifics, if one specific doesn't apply to all the items in the lot, leave it blank. So you have to fill in the ones that are required. And I suggest saying various artists, various labels, various whatever that requirement is. And when it comes for the recommended specifics, unless they're shared like genre with the entire group of recordings, or they're all CDs, you can say that, leave the rest of them blank.
So I have a question, because I understand that item specifics are about helping the search engine and helping buyers narrow down to the item that they're looking for through the search engine. Are there other ways to indicate to the search engine what artists or labels or years or whatever are in that lot of CDs?
Yes, there is. They're not very efficient. Some of them are old. You could put a list, and you should put a list in your description of each of the items that's in the lot. In this case, if they're recordings, you'd want to put the artist, and you'd want to put, I don't know if you need to put the label, you might want to put the album title or the CD title. So the artist and the CD title should be a list within your description. And I would say that in your title, you want to make sure that you use the word lot. I wouldn't use a lot of extraneous words. I'd say lot, and then I would say maybe there's two or three artists that are indicative of what's that are going to be the most popularly searched, and I would use those in your title, and then let the chips fall where they may. There used to be in a lot of our categories, the subcategories for wholesale lots for people who are selling like Rob's doing now, but most of those are gone. So you have to indicate it in the title, and you can also indicate it in the item listing page. When you're describing the item, there is in the pricing and quantity section, there's a box you can say that this is a lot. And you want to check that because it's important for anyone who looks at the item to understand that when they make a purchase, they're not going to get to select one of the items, that everything in that listing is one lot for one price.
Okay. Well, thanks again, Rob. I hope that was helpful. And we're going to send you an eBay for Business podcast mug.
Yay!
And remember, if you submit a voicemail or an email question to either 888-723-4630 or podcast@ebay.com, and we use it in an episode, we'll send you a podcast mug.
Yeah, and Rob did that. So we already got him his address down and he's getting his mug. So don't forget to include your shipping address whenever you email or call in a question or a comment. Now, our next question was called in to 888-723-4630. Let's listen.
Hello, this is Memory Lane Pottery and Glass, and I had a question regarding being able to do a Facebook off of one of my sales, and I don't know how to do that link. That would be great if you could add it to your podcast. Thank you very much. My name is Diane Hamilton.
Thanks for calling in, Diane. Great question. Linking an eBay listing to your Facebook feed is really easy. On your listing page, look in the right-hand top corner of the page, and directly under the search button, you should see four little icons, and the second one will be an F for Facebook. Click it and follow the instructions to add this page to your Facebook newsfeed or your story. You can also select to show it on a Facebook group or a Facebook page that you manage.
Diane, one word of advice. I love your energy and you're looking for ways to market your sales and your listings, and that's really great, but do be strategic. Remember that just posting your listings to Facebook over and over may not be the right strategy and could actually turn off your friends and followers. At the very least, always include some commentary or questions that can help engage your followers to respond back. So it's not just about the listing, but maybe something special about the listing or the category is a category that means something to you. Or you could create a group in Facebook where it's going to be, let's share our listings. And maybe those would be a good place for it. So I would just advise a little caution. Don't overdo it with posting your listings to any social media platform.
Yeah, totally agree. You have to be strategic about the approach to social media marketing.
Yeah. Test, right, Rebecca? Always test.
Always test. Test and learn.
Test and learn. It's the story of our lives. That's it for this week's questions. Thanks to everyone who sent in a question so far. Stay tuned for upcoming episodes to hear if we answer your question or address your comment here on an episode.
And if you have a question or a comment you want to share with the eBay for Business podcast listeners, why not call it in on 888-723-4630?
I'll repeat that, 888-723-4630. I've been repeating that number now for almost, oh my heavens, 18 years, as long as some teenagers have been alive and are going off to college. Leave a question or comment, and if it's relevant, at 888-723-4630, we just might put it on the air.
And if you're not a call on the phone person, you can always email us at podcast@ebay.com. That's podcast@ebay.com. And either way, don't forget to include your shipping address so that if we play your question on the air, we can send you a podcast mug.
Now, it's time for your daily podcast to-do list.
Number one, check the announcement board for up-to-date seller news.
Number two, fill in any applicable recommended item specifics, and if they're not applicable, leave them blank.
And third, check out the transcript for this and all episodes to follow up on what you've heard and to see the links that we referenced during the episode.
Now, on our next episode, which will be episode 144, we'll meet eBay Vice President Cherish Marquez, who's going to share insights into eBay's fashion category, as well as discuss something called the eBay Reopen Report, which was just released.
We'd like to thank again our guests this week, John and Sharon Ware.
The eBay for Business podcast is produced and distributed by Libsyn and Podcast 411.